You are listening to Hit Play, Not Pause, a feisty menopause podcast for active, performance-minded women. I am your host, Celine Yeager. Each week, I bring you advice from athletes, scientists, researchers, and other experts to help you feel and perform your best, no matter what your hormones are doing. This show is a production of Live Feisty Media. Hello, strong, feisty women. I hope you all are well. So this past December, I came across this story in the BBC, and the headline was, Bramley Woman Returns to BMX Racing After 34 Years. And of course, I click on it and see what this is all about. And the story says, Sarah Jane Nichols, 52, from Bramley, Hampshire, won world gold in the girls over 16 title in 1986 as a teenager and plans to return to national competitions. She said after being, quote unquote, hit by menopause really badly, she had to give up playing ice hockey, which left her looking for another way to stay active. So Ms. Nichols said she restored her BMX bike and started to attend rallies. And of course, I finished the story, but not before I DM'd my friend Jamie Bestwick, who is a Pennsylvania BMX legend. And I said, you must help connect me to this woman. And he did. And what a conversation it was. As the story explained, Sarah Jane, or SJ as her friends call her, was a seven-time British champion, four-time European champion, and the 1986 world champion in BMX. And now, 34 years later, at the age of 52, she has picked up her BMX bike again and is gunning for national championships, the British national championships. And we get into all of it. Her history with the traditionally male sport, actually call that traditionally male sports if you include ice hockey, how she was knocked down for the count by menopause, and how she is getting back on her feet and on her BMX bike, and again, is all in and gunning for this British national championship. I freaking loved this conversation, and I am pretty sure you will too. Okay, before we get to it, reminder that I am taking voicemails to do a Q&A episode. It's kind of funny, after we did the 100 episode where we got all those great voicemails about what you get from the show, I expected there'd be a lot of these, especially since I get tons and tons of questions from in email and DMs and carrier pigeons. And it's been a little bit of crickets out there. I have a few that have come in, but I'm feeling maybe you guys are a little shy about reading your questions on air. I'm not sure. So I'll probably mix and match this episode with the voicemails I get along with some of the questions I get through other avenues. But you can still leave a question. If you are not feeling shy, you can leave them to speakpipe.com/hitplay. I'll put a clickable link to that in the show notes. Remember to sign up for my free weekly blog at feistymenopause.com, where I distill all the latest research and what's going on and what it means to you. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at feistymenopause.com. Come join our private Hit Play Not Pause Facebook group. And thank you for all the great reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify that are still coming in. I really appreciate them. If you haven't yet, please add the show to your automatic downloads on your podcast platform, which is just like hitting the little plus sign in the right-hand corner on the Apple Podcast platform. It really helps the show to continue to grow. All right. Quick thanks to Bonafide for their continued support of the show. They definitely have the secret sauce when it comes to vaginal comfort, as well as super lovely hair and skin serums and other products. They have been with us since the beginning, and I really appreciate them. So thanks, Bonafide. All right, enough of me. Let's have a few words about these awesome sponsors and get on with the show. Good sleep. The one thing that sets you up for a great workout and a good day is quality sleep. We talk about it all the time here on the show, which is why I'm stoked to have Lagoon Sleep as a new sponsor. Because one of the most overlooked tools in a great sleep toolbox is the thing you literally rest your head on 8 hours a night, your pillow. A quality pillow is everything. Otherwise, you end up tossing, turning, punching, and folding your pillow, waking up with neck pain, and all the stuff that happens when your pillow doesn't meet your personal comfort needs. Say hello to the most comfortable sleep you've ever had with Lagoon. They start you out with a 2-minute personalized pillow quiz and then pair you with your perfect pillow. I got the Otter, a cooling adjustable pillow that is perfect for side sleepers who run warm at night like I do. It is a dream. It's fully adjustable, so I was able to get the perfect loft and support, and the cooling feature is everything. As someone who turned into a furnace every evening before menopause, I appreciate that the Otter is stuffed with shredded gel-infused memory foam, which instead of trapping heat from my neck and head, draws it away and dissipates it. It's truly delightful. I'm a good sleeper, and Otter's taken it to the next level with both support and cooling. Put my head down, good night, Irene. My Aura ring confirms what little tossing and turning I was doing is gone. The beauty of the pillow quiz is you can get the perfect pillow that you need to and make your sleep the best sleep you can have. Go to lagoonsleep.com/hitplay and take the 2-minute quiz to find your perfect match, and then use the code HITPLAY, all caps one word, for 15% off your first purchase. Sweet dreams. All right. Well, Sarah Jane, I am very excited to have you here. First, congratulations on your induction to the Hall of Fame. That's very cool.
Oh, thank you. It was a huge honor. It was unexpected as well, actually, but it was totally unexpected. I mean, we just never know when you go to these things, do you? It was such a huge event. I mean, they put out all the stops for it. They put out, you know, the red carpet. It was a proper ceremony. I mean, it was like the Oscars for BMX, but it was the first one that's ever been done. There's never been a British BMX Hall of Fame, so it was all these years that obviously BMX has been going, like since the very early 80s, and there's not been a BMX a Hall of Fame, so it was quite incredible. It was an amazing evening, absolutely amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, congratulations, and let's go right there. Like, let's talk about, you know, your history. From my math, it looks like you started when you were about 11, right? Somewhere around there?
Yeah, so I was about 11 years old when I started BMX racing. Prior to that,
get into a lad's sport? And sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but prior to that, what were you doing?
So prior to that, yeah, I was doing a very unladylike, as we spoke about before on our emails, but I was doing schoolboy motocross. I wonder if my parents actually wanted a boy, but because so I've always been quite sporty, but yeah, my dad got me like a little motorbike, and then they took me like actually racing the motorbikes, motocross. So from about the age of about 7, I was racing schoolboy motocross.
Oh, wow.
And then it was only when BMXs, because probably there was no BMXs were around this time. We had grifters and chopper bikes and whatever, you know, people just made up bikes that they pedaled around on. So because BMX stands for obviously bicycle motocross, so these bikes started turning up at the motocross meetings. And that was when they sort of started turning up. Then the kids would be pedaling them around, trying to go around the motocross tracks and just doing jumps and wheelies and little bits and bobs. And that was the sort of start of it. You know, we were sort of like, oh, we'd like one of these. Everyone wanted one back in the early 80s for Christmas or whatever. So we did get our first bikes for Christmas. And from that, I mean, I was a little bit disappointed. I've told this story at the Hall of Fame because I don't know how much you know about BMX racing, but and especially in the UK, there was this bike called a rally burner. And it was a really heavy blue and yellow bike that was just absolutely like awful for racing or anything. It just weighed a ton, had these big plastic wheels, but everyone wanted them because you could just buy them in your local shop, you know. They weren't specialized or specialist type bike or anything. But I come downstairs on Christmas Day, and me and my brother, we walked into like the spare room, and there was these two bikes, but they weren't yellow and blue, they were red. They had spokes, and they were pretty light. But in fairness, my dad had actually done a little research, because obviously from the schoolboy motocross, he's sort of like, obviously was thinking ahead about me racing these bikes, and he had sort of invested a bit of time and effort into trying to find a race bike for us. So my first bike was a sort of a half decent. Well, it wasn't the rally burner that I wanted that all the kids were riding around the streets on, but it was a it was a good starting bike. So no, that was really how I got into BMX. My yeah, from that we had our bikes. My dad took us to a race meeting, and I won my first race meeting. So it's sort of like super exciting, especially when you have a win. And like when I was doing motocross, I was just, you know, riding around middle of the pack or racing around middle of the pack. No, so it was exciting. From that moment on, that was sort of that was the starting point.
Were there other girls?
In the motocross, there wasn't very many. No, not in the motocross. In the girls, and there wasn't actually that very many in the early days of BMX. It was quite funny, actually, because when I first started racing BMX, they divided it into two groups. There was just juniors and seniors, and they called us powder puffs. So I was a junior powder puff. And there wasn't very many of us. I mean, not like these days. These days, there's categories from under sixes up to the 30 plus in the BMX world these days in the females. But back then, there wasn't. But it grew over the years. Obviously, I was in at the very beginning in the early 80s. I was really lucky that because it was such a big craze, such a big thing during the 80s over here. I was lucky I picked up sponsorship and had enough money to sort of get my first little car, made a little bit of money from it, even though I was sort of a kid, a teenager. But it was, yeah, it was good back in those days. It was, but like I said, there wasn't that many women, but as it picked up, it did. But when I won the world championships in 86, that was 16 plus category. So that was as far as it went. But there wasn't like these days where you got like now there's, like I say, 30 plus women is an age category these days. So it just shows you how it's evolved. I mean, it did go for a little quiet stage in the 90s. But like again, now it's really big now. It's popular again.
I watched the footage. It's amazing what you can find on YouTube. Like I watched your race. I watched the 1986 championship runs, like all of them against Karen Murphy. It looked like that was your main rival. And like the reporter guy literally was just like, not a very feminine thing to do, but we'll get into that later. But it was super exciting. Like you came that last home stretch, you were like shot out of a cannon. Like how well do you remember that winning race in from 86?
Yeah, that race was, I mean, obviously probably that's the most memorable race for me ever. I mean, I can, even now, if I watch it back now, I'm thinking I can't remember. I mean, I was last out the start. I was favourite to win because it was obviously the world championships, but I'd already won the European championships that year. I'd already had the number one plate for the UK. So I was sort of favourite and I'd won my motos, I'd won my heats, I'd won my quarterfinals. But then back in those days, you used to have to pick, you had your lanes down the start hill. So you had like eight lanes and you had to stay in your lane for 15 metres. So if you're in the far left-hand lane going into a right-hand corner, you can imagine you're at a disadvantage, really. So you used to pick, back in the day, you used to pick a peg out of a bag. And it's all changed these days, which we'll bring up a bit later. But back then, you used to pick a peg. And I picked gate eight, which was right on the far left-hand side. Going, and I had to stay in my lane. You weren't allowed to touch the white line or you're disqualified for 15 metres before you could move over to, you know, you could cut across. And it's going into a right-hand berm corner, you know. And so I think just then I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I've got, you know, I was so nervous anyway. And the lights, the traffic light system, start gate dropped. I was just too nervous. Nerves hit me. I was last out the gate. I went, pedaled my butt off going down the first straight. The girl next to me, the Dutch girl, she come off. So I crashed into her. Luckily, I wasn't riding. I mean, these days they ride clips, a lot of the BMXers. I mean, you can choose not to, but if you're over 13, you're allowed to race in clips, and a lot do. Luckily, no one used them back then. It was just bands all the way. But so I'd lost my foot in, and I was just flat last. I was seventh because the Dutch girl had fallen off. I was seventh. And I just pedaled my way around, and again you couldn't do that these days because the tracks have changed so much, but back in the day there wasn't so many jumps. It was a lot more power and pedaling all the way around the outside of this track, all the way around up from fourth to third, and then as you probably saw on the last berm, I was second, Karen Murphy was ahead of me. Last straight there was a set of doubles and I was pretty good at jumping back in the day, and so I jumped these doubles, she rode the doubles, and I just power my way through to the finish line. And yeah, most memorable race ever. I mean, like I said, I just relive it in my head. It's like, oh my God, I don't know how I done it. I mean, I don't know if I turn the camera around, you can probably see at the end of my bed here is, I don't know if I can turn it around actually. Yeah, there is, that is me. I wake up to this.
Oh, that's awesome. And you're in the air. You're on that
Yeah.
double. That's so cool.
Yeah, so I wake up and that's giving me my inspiration at the moment now that I'm back training to race. So I wake up in the morning, look at that and think, yeah, I can do it.
Musculoskeletal health is everything during menopause. Everyone knows how much I love Joint Health Plus from Prevenex, which has helped me get back to distance running after arthritic toes stopped me in my tracks. Now they have a product that has become my go-to for muscle strength and recovery, Muscle Health Plus. Muscle Health Plus contains all the key ingredients we talk about on this show, like creatine monohydrate, essential amino acids, and branched-chain amino acids, plus even more cutting-edge ingredients like HMB and estrogen that are scientifically shown to increase muscle growth, recovery, and strength. I use it every day during my early morning lifting sessions, and there's no question that it helps my power during those workouts and my recovery after. Plus, I love having everything I need from the best high-quality ingredients in one reasonably priced shake. I've also heard from fellow users who have had bloating or GI upset in the past from creatine that haven't had any of that with Muscle Health Plus. I make my shake with almond milk and espresso, but it's also good with ice-cold water, which makes the flavor really pop. As always, you can get 15% off your first order with the code HIPPLAY, all caps, one word, at Prevenex.com. That's HIPPLAY, all caps, one word, at Prevenex.com. Do your muscles a favor and head on over and get some today. For decades, running shoes have been researched, tested, and designed for men. Brands have relied on the shrink it and pink it approach to sell male shoes to female customers. That's why we are stoked to be working with Hedas. Hedas designs athletic footwear for women that elevates performance, safety, and style. Hedas has unlocked the science behind women's biomechanics through dedicated research and creates better shoes for women's performance. Some of Hedas' special features include a lower ankle collar to reduce rubbing on women's ankle bones, a breathable mesh toe box to allow for ventilation and accommodate female toe shape, a more narrow and reductive heel cup to reduce heel slippage and take pressure off the Achilles, a rounded instep that creates a snug fit through the middle to match the curvature of a woman's foot, and supercritical foam and a PBEX plate in the midsole to keep our legs going when the going gets tough. Hedas has three shoe models designed for different sessions: the Alma Cruise for your long runs, the Alma Tempo for training days, and the Alma Speed for pushing the pace. I've been running in the Alma Tempos, and they are a pleasure to train in. You can get your own pair of Hedas at Hedas.com and use the code FEISTY20, that's all caps, FEISTY20, for 20% off. Check it out today. We'll put a clickable link in the show notes to make it a snap. So yeah, let's, like I said, it was funny because the announcer there was, talking to Karen and saying like BMX is not a very feminine thing to do. And I thought that was really funny when I read one of your quotes, and I can't remember what media outlet it was, but it in your comeback you said it was a nice ladylike thing for a 50-year-old lady to do. And were you throwing back to then? I mean, or
No, that was actually in reference, I think, to my, I had no plans to come back to race BMX, to be quite truthful. I would just, I've got my, I've kept, I still have my 1986 BMX, but yeah, the one that I won the worlds on, and I had it restored. So it looks, it's amazing. It's exactly as I just showed you on that photo is what I've had it, it's back to, 'cause it was sprayed in my sponsor's colors and everything after I won the worlds, they wanted to spray it and whatever, but I've had it all done back to it, like its original 86 condition. So my plan was with that, when my plan was just to sort of, and obviously we're going to hit on the menopause, but I was sort of struggling, and after I've got some help and stuff, I thought, right, I'm just going to take things easy and just going to go to some of these like old school BMX. They have like a big old school scene over here of BMX, and sort of like sit in fields and display your bike and have a few drinks and have a little ride out down the beach, or to the pub and whatever. They do all these sort of events, and that was my plan. Basically, I think, I don't know if I even did say ladylike or just a bit more relaxed sort of thing. Step back from, I've been playing ice hockey for years and done a lot of road cycling, and now I just thought, no, I'm going to take a nice relaxed, 50-year-old, sort of like just sitting around and yeah, just enjoying that sort of thing. But no, little did I know what's happened now.
It feels like I want to dig into that a little bit, because when I was doing, some reading on you, like you just sort of threw out that, oh, I've been playing hockey for years, but you've really played ice hockey. Like you like it's you don't just do it like as a beer group on the weekends, right? I mean, you were involved for like 35 years. I mean, was it a profession for you? Were you a professional ice hockey player?
No, it wasn't. There's actually, I don't even think there is any women's professional ice hockey here in the UK. But I did play at women's elite level for years and years. I played for England. I represented Great Britain obviously when I was younger. And then, like the last 8 years or so, I took a step back and just I played like recreational hockey. Was with just a group. I was the only female on our team. But it was just more for fun then, So I'd sort of done my years of, and over here in the UK, ice hockey's, they're sort of like a, I know because I've been to Canada a few times, and obviously it's so big in Canada. I don't have different parts of the states and stuff, but over here it's like low priority ice time. So my training was at 11 o'clock at night, and matches, especially when I played rec hockey, like last 8 years, I had matches at midnight and things like that. It was crazy. But I mean, all those years of playing, I would travel to, because we didn't have, and I don't have an ice rink, they're not like on your doorstep, so to speak. But I'd travel up to Guildford, which was about 45 minutes on a Friday night from training from 10:30 to 12:45. And I'd done that for 10 years,
Wow.
was a long time and a lot of dedication. I mean, I loved hockey. I did love it. I mean, menopause was one of the reasons that I gave it up, actually, or I retired from it.
What about it? Like, I mean, it does sound like you hit a bit of a rough patch. Like, what was going on? That you quit in like 2020, right? You put down ice hockey?
Yeah, that's right. So I've been playing right up until, I mean, COVID didn't help when COVID came along. I was hit, like, the menopause hit me as well as sort of COVID coming along. And I was hit. I mean, I think I've heard you say actually on one of your casts when I was listening back that sort of hit you quite quickly. And that's how it hit me, like literally boom. I was like, I mean, I had like perimenopausal, I'd had little bit from about 48. I noticed my concentration wasn't very good, especially hockey. I mean, lads would take the mick. I was like, the coach would shout out a drill and he'd be like, right, okay, I want you to, pass to such and such. Turn, shoot, skate round, blah, blah, blah. I would stand there and go, oh, it just wouldn't go in, like as years before,
Like, sorry,
I
what
just
did you
couldn't.
say? Yeah.
Yeah. I just wouldn't sink in. I just couldn't get it. And I'd get out there and I'd go back of the line so I could make sure I'd be watching to see what we had to do. And then I'd still forget. And the lads would, they would just laugh at me. They were like, what? And I said, I don't know. But at the time, I didn't really put that down to, I just thought, oh, perhaps I'm just getting a bit complacent in all these years. But looking back now, I guess this was part of the perimenopause. Because then I started getting the odd night sweats. Then and there was they yeah, they weren't very often, but they were coming. And then I'd have erratic periods. That was when I started thinking, okay, here we go, some heading towards it. Here it's on its way. But little did I know that when it hit me, it would hit me as hard. And to be quite honest with you, I'm still having issues. I'm still struggling with things at the moment. Even with the HRT, I'm not 100% really. And I'm thinking of, I've got an appointment next week at the doctor's, but I want to go back after this appointment next week to discuss hormones and stuff a bit more and see if there's something, because I am still struggling with a few things.
What are those? Can you share what those are? Like, what are you still struggling with?
Well, then my brain fog, my memory is horrendous. Even now, even tonight, literally, I'm downstairs, I'm doing dinner. And I thought I'd run a little bit of water into the sink with a little bit of washing up liquid, to. And then 5 minutes later, I turn around, literally, I mean, our houses are quite small in the UK. I've got a little 2-bedroom house. So my kitchen is quite tiny. I turn around, the sink's overflowing because I'm still, I mean, I'm literally like 3 foot away from it.
Ha.
It's overflowing. And I'm like, oh, these, and it's constant, it's day in, day out. I mean, there's a chap at work said to me, "Oh, well, I do, you know, men, some men are really, they just don't always get it." This chap, he says to me, "Oh, I lose my keys all the time." I said, "Yeah, but if you started losing, okay, so you lose your keys 10 times a day. If you started losing your keys 50 times a day, you would know there's something up, because that's not your normal, you know." And this is what I tried to explain, because this is what I get quite a lot. "Oh, well, I'm always forgetting things. I'm always losing things. I'm always leaving my phone line." Yeah, but we do. But when it becomes more, that it becomes apparent, and people, I mean, my partner notices it all the time. It's just day in, day out. So that's one of the things I've got to go back to try and talk to my doctor about libido. I don't know how much I talk about things on here, but that was
We
one
talk
of
about everything.
okay, that's cool. So that's gone, that went pretty much perimenopausal. And that's not really come back. And it's yeah, that's a tough one for, you know, for everybody.
You went to see a doctor and you got, are you on a combination of estrogen and progesterone?
Yes, yeah. So I take the progesterone pill and HRT patch. I have had my dosage upped. The tiredness, I still feel really tired. I do, yeah, tiredness is a big issue. I'm always tired. So I am going to go speak to them, because I think there's obviously lots of things that can be done. And a lot of women do sit back and don't go to seek help, or just struggle through it. Or, you know, I think sometimes the older generation, I saw a lady the other day, and she'd seen my article about my one of my the TV interview thing I'd done back along. She's like, "I don't know why you keep mentioning menopause, menopause this." She said, "We have menopause, just poof," you know. And I thought, but now there's help out there, and you've got to seek it. And especially as I know that I mean, and not everyone's the same, are they? I spoke to another lady actually last weekend on New Year's Eve, and she said, "Oh, I've not really had hardly anything. A little bit of anxiety," she said, "but I've not really had flushes, or not really had this." I mean, before I had like when I quit, when I was like the ice hockey retired, I mean, I was having all sorts of symptoms. Like I say, when it hit first, it hit bad. The HRT has helped, but you know, it did hit during COVID, it hit me hard.
Yeah, and your doctor might actually, I mean, when you mentioned libido and some of the fatigue, I mean, you might benefit from a little bit of testosterone thrown in there. I mean, that's part of the hormonal milieu too, and it doesn't, I don't think that gets talked about quite as much.
No, I actually, you know, I've looked into that as well. And so I am going, that is something I'm going to, I think they do here
It's
in the UK.
approved for libido.
Yes, yeah, and tiredness. And that is what I'm struggling with. It is the tiredness. I mean, I'm so tired. And although I'm loving coming back to my BMX and stuff at the moment, but it's still, I'm find I'm just so tired. You know, I'm gonna be in bed at 7:30 in the evening, and it is just the tiredness. So I am going to mention, I think you have to have a test actually for testosterone over here in the UK. I think they have to send you for one. So I am going to suggest that and see. I'm hoping that, yeah. My
Yeah, I mean,
partner's
you
hoping. My
should.
partner's hoping the libido.
That's not normal. It's okay to want to be, to want to
Yeah.
have these things in your life to not be like super fatigued and have no libido. Like that's not an unreasonable thing to want in your life.
But that's the three things at the moment, like the libido, the brain fog, and the tiredness. So that I do, I am going to make another trip back to the doctors, and hopefully get that sorted. But like I said, the HRT has helped the other stuff. So I think I was saying, when I mean, I started like when I was about 50, and the menopause really came, it hit me. It was more at night to start with. So at night time, I'd come to bed, and then I'd be, you know, going to the toilet all the time, having to go to the loo for a wee. So this was the stuff. I was like, "Oh my God, here we go, to the toilet again." Wait, when I got back, that would trigger a flush. So I'd have a flush. So I'd rip off the duvet, lay here like, you know, roasting, burning up. But this would also then cause me to have palpitations. So it was really bizarre. It was just this whole repeat every single night. So the palpitations would come, the flush would be there. I'd be led here, roasting, windows wide open. My bedroom is like an ice box. And then of course the coldness after about half an hour, it's like, "Oh, you're so cold, you've kind
Right.
of you've disturbed, you've broken up your partner." And then it's like, give me like, I don't know, another 45 minutes and I'm off to the loo again, you know? So I go to the loo, and then it would be literally this whole like repeating cycle during the night. And I don't know how many times. And of course, you are tired the next day. And I would just be moody. I mean, I had everything. I was like moody, I was irritable, had no motivation, just want to sit on the sofa. It didn't help with COVID being one of those. But during COVID over here in the UK, a lot of people were, we were allowed to go walking or cycling things. And it just wasn't like me to be not wanting to do it, you know. And we have beautiful weather. I mean, for the UK, it's like our weather's known for being wet and windy and cold and not very nice, which like is out there now. But do you know what? During COVID, it was as though God was like saying, oh, well, you've got COVID. We're going to give you some nice weather. It was beautiful. Honestly, it was like about 24 degrees. And every day, it was in April, and people were out, you know, walking, keeping their distance and that sort of thing, and cycling about locally, and the things you could do, you were allowed to do. And there was me sat indoors, miserable, irritable, not wanting to get up, not wanting to do anything, crying. I'll just cry, no reason. I mean, I don't know why I was crying. I'd just cry. And I would know to myself, why am I crying? I don't know. And I just couldn't stop. It was just, it was horrendous. Honestly, I laugh, but it was horrendous. Honestly, I when I spoke, when the doctor finally phoned me back, I can remember the day, because you have to sort of make e-consults and things over here for the doctors. It's not always easy to get, and especially during COVID, it was even harder. When she phoned me back, I just remember being in tears. I was in tears to her, like, please help me. You know, this is not me. You know, I'm not like, oh, I've been, you know, I've been playing ice hockey, I've been cycling, I do an active job, I'm, you know, happy, and here I am just miserable. And but anyway, so that was really sort of the story that was. And then I got, she did prescribe HRT for me, which has helped.
Well, that's great. That I mean, that is. I'm very glad to hear that, and I'm glad that you are able to get that help. I mean, it's. I hear this all the time. I mean, people. There are a lot of women whose lives are. They're just. They're not anything like themselves. You know, they're unrecognizable to themselves, and there's no point in suffering through that. That's just. There's no.
No.
There's. It's unnecessary.
And a lot of people do go to the point, oh, I mean, especially I think it's like a British stiff upper lip type thing, is to go, oh, well, you know, I'll get through it, and I'll sort of soldier on, and I'll, and you know, why suffer? Do you, I mean, don't, there's no point, especially if you're, yeah, just go seek some sort of, you know, medical help, or speak to somebody at least, or, you know, I mean, I did try some, like different alternative medicines to start with the sleeping and stuff. I think I tried some magnesium, and can't think what else I tried, sage leaf things. I did try a few alternatives and stuff, but, and I think they helped a little bit, but it was still not, you know, I think I just needed that little extra, and perhaps I still do now. Like I say, it's still not not the best.
At what point did you make that decision to return to BMX racing?
Okay, so that came about a little bit by accident. So, like I said, I was planning on, so I sort of retired from the ice hockey because of the menopause. I mean, I can remember being on the ice, and I had a flush, and this was during training when I was already like, I mean, if you've seen ice hockey players, quite often you steam, even though the ice rink's cold, you steam because you're so hot from training. But I was already like roasting, and then I had a flush on the ice, and I thought I was going to pass out. And it's the one time that I've actually had to get off in all the years. I don't know, I ever got off from training. I had to say to my coach, I've got to get, I'm going to pass out. I was all over the show. I was so dizzy. And that was so from doing that. And then when COVID hit and the late nights, and then I wasn't able to train because they shut the ice rink for a while, and this, that, and the other. So slowly, slowly, I sort of got out of doing it. And then with the, obviously the menopause, all the issues, I sort of decided perhaps I won't go back to ice hockey anyway, but I didn't really know what I was doing myself, to be quite true, because I was so low. But once I got the HRT, I thought, I made up my decision. I was going to do some of these old school, like I said earlier, take my bike and go and sit in the field and enjoy these sort of summers, the evenings, sat in a film of BMX, old BMX with some other friends, and do these little ride outs. spotted me. I'd done this one called Santa Cruz, which is a Christmas one. You dress up as a Father Christmas or a Christmassy character and cycle around London. It's a charity event, all on old school BMXs. And there's probably about 600 to 800 of them. So when I first got my old BMX restored, I said, okay, so I wanted to really do Santa Cruz. So I'd got it restored, went up to London on my own, on the train, up, cycle around, amazing day, absolutely amazing. I've just done my second one. But someone saw on my Facebook page from Andover BMX Club, which is the most local club to me here. He said, oh, you should come along to Andover, bring your old BMX and chat to the kids. Now, like, come, you know, see what the new BMXing is all about. But the kids would love to meet an ex-world champion, and they'd love to see your old bike, and they'd, you know, love to hear your stories. So I was like, well, okay. So I put him off to start with because it was December, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, maybe when the weather's warmer. So I really didn't have any sort of plans to revisit like the new BMX scene as such at the time. Anyway, when the weather got warmer, it was about April, I had this message again. Hi, SJ. You know, the weather's warmer now. We'd still love to see you at Andover. So with that, I was like, oh, okay, great. So I took myself off down to Andover BMX track with my old BMX and chatted and done, you know, sort of met with the kids and stuff. And it was quite nice. But of course, from that, they said to me, would you like to try a bike, you know, a new bike? You know, so it's totally different. The style of bikes are different. There's a lot, not as changed over 35 years. And I was like, yeah, of course I will. You know, I mean, I've always been sporty, active. And that's, so of course, yeah, yeah. And so they gave me a bike and they gave me a helmet and some gloves. And off I went up to the start hill. And I don't know, it was just bizarre. I just went around the track and I don't know, everything just came flooding back. And I was just like, how good this is. Oh, my God, this is, okay, it's all changed. And there's so much to learn. But, oh, my God, I was just like, this is great. And I even like a little bit of jump and a little bit of air over on this. I was like, and they were like, SJ, you need to think about coming back. You know, there's older classes now, you know, there's a women's class. And I was like, well, yeah, actually, you know, I'm loving this. I thought to start with, I thought perhaps even if I just do it for fitness, because it's totally different. Oh, my days. It's so, so, so hard work, like really, really hard work. And I know I'm older, but even the youngsters are puffing and panting, you know, it's, but I thought, well, even if it's just for fitness, you know. So I started going along every Wednesday and borrowing a bike. And of course it wasn't very long before I was looking at buying a bike, buying a helmet, buying another, and then literally now I'm back hooked. I'm training, and obviously you've heard that I've raced a few club races now where it's just mixed, just with my Andover club. So they just put us in together. But it's just to give you a rough idea. I've been to watch the new style of BMX in the new school BMX. I went to the British Championships to watch and give me an idea of the competition too. and I've been training really hard. And now like my training's I'm up in my training a lot now, because obviously the season starts in March. I'm just waiting for the regional fixtures to be announced. So it's been incredible. I've been out today, been around a little pump track today.
I love all of this. I'm very, I don't know, I'm not steeped in being a BMX enough. I mean, I know a lot of BMX riders, it's all different styles. What, when you say it's changed so much, like, can you tell me a little bit like about that? Like what is different from when you were, you know, 35 years ago? Like what are the tracks like now? Like what's it?
Yeah. So the track, I mean, both the bikes and the tracks have really changed. So the tracks hold a lot more jumps. The start hills are a lot bigger. They started coming electronically towards the end of the 80s, but now they're obviously all just electric. Then they're a great big barrel of a gate, you know, it stands about 2 foot high. The start hills are a lot steeper, and the jumps, I mean, back in the 80s, we would probably, you'd go down the straight and you'd probably have one jump, one little to medium sized jump round a low bank to berm. They weren't very high, they were quite low, because you could put your foot out and go around them, and then maybe, so you probably have one jump, maybe two per straight. And bearing in mind there's only like four straights generally on a BMX track. There's sort of like a what's the thing, like a safety, not a safety pin, a paperclip type shape, you know. So that was how come, like, winning the worlds, I was able to power away around the outside. These days, the tracks, oh no, there's like jumps. There's four jumps down the first straight in Andover. Then you've got a really high banked berm, and then there's another four down the second straight. And then generally the last straight, sometimes the last two straights, they have what they call a rhythm section. So it's all the pumping. Oh yeah, it's even thinking about the pumping makes me look
Exhausting.
good.
I've been on a
It
little pump
is.
track and it's amazing. Your heart rate just goes straight through the roof on those things.
Exactly. They're great training. I mean, we've got quite a few of those around here now. They're quite popular in the UK, which is good because we never had those. Back in the day, there was nothing like that. We just have to go to the woods and, with our shovels and dig a few jumps and stuff out, honestly, or put some wood on some bricks to jump off of, things like that. But the pump tracks are great. And yeah, they are so hard work. I mean, there's no pedaling. I've been today and have been practicing around a little pump track near here. And yeah, it's just exhausting. You just go around even like two or three times, and it's all on your arms and your legs. And the bikes, where the bikes have changed as well. So all the geometries have changed. The bikes are slightly longer now. We used to have the saddle up quite high back in the 80s. So when you'd go round the corners, the berms, you'd be able to perch your bottom down. Now there's like no saddle. I mean, well, there is, but it's just, I don't know, it's just for decoration. It's just down so low. Your knees, when you try to sit on it, your knees are up to your chin. And so I don't really know what the saddles are there for now, but I suppose it's just there in case you have to plonk down. But they're it's so much strain on your legs, on your thighs. It is just like I've been doing a lot of squats and bench presses and stuff to strengthen to practice for these pump sections and stuff. Because being the last straight as well on these new tracks, the pump section, quite often your legs are. That is where, I mean, when I've done these club races at the moment, this is what I'm really focusing on my training at the moment, is the last straight. The first three straights, I'm not too bad. Obviously, fitness can always be improved, but the last straight, oh, that's my legs are jelly by that last berm, and there's not been much more I can give in that last straight. So that's my big push at the moment, is to get. Yeah, that last straight. There's like that last sort of that 5 seconds out of it. So I'm gonna hopefully get a personal trainer for hopefully I'm gonna speak to him next week. Like, I'm waiting for a hospital appointment, which isn't great, next week. Once that's done and I've gotten all clear from that, then hopefully that's the plan, is to get a personal trainer to just push me through this last sort of couple of months, just to get, so then I know that when I go back out in May, in March, sorry, April, when I get the season, when it starts, I've given everything for my comeback. It's like, and that would be the best that I can, I've thrown everything at it. I've been training, I go to the track. It's hard at the moment with the weather and dark nights and stuff over here, but obviously it's raining a lot and it's dark by 4 o'clock, so it's not so easy to get to the track. So it's a lot of gym work at the moment, just get to the track when you can, sort of thing, or pump tracks when you can. But I'm literally throwing everything at it so that I know when I come back, that's it. I've given everything. I've thrown everything, and that is it. It's the best I can do, and I'm hoping it's going to be good enough.
So how much is the I have so many questions. Like how long is each run? Like how much does endurance play into this? I mean, do you have to build some sort of a base of endurance for it as well?
It's not so much endurance, because literally the races are about 40 to 50 seconds.
Oh, okay. That is really short. Yeah.
It's just really intense, but it's really, yeah, it's just it is really short, which is good. But then you have the breaks in between. It always makes it hard. When I've done this winter one recently, just the club race, so we had like 50, I mean, it was quite, because there wasn't many there. I mean, the breaks would be longer when I race at the regional. There's a lot more riders, but there was probably about a, I don't know, 20 minute rest
Oof.
between races, and it was like minus four or something. It was so cold, and yet so your legs just, they went so cold so quick. And then you had to try and do a, and it's like doing a, someone compared it to, someone told me recently, it's a bit like training or doing like a 400 meter hurdle race. So you sort of got that sprint element, but you also need to be able to have the strength to for the jumps and stuff, and
Yeah.
holding the bike. And yeah, it's really tough. It's definitely tougher than what I remember from the 80s, and I think it is tougher actually these days. like I say, with the tracks and everything being so many more jumps.
Do you do anything special for your recovery?
Probably I'd rest the next day, that's for sure. And just and stretch to the best. Like, I mean, it's literally, it does wipe me out. And this is another thing that I hope, I mean, I know obviously age, when you get to, I mean, I'm 52, I'll be 53 in May. So, you know, it is going to be tiring, but I do feel that somewhere along the line, my hormones are still not like playing as they should be. Because I do feel it literally wipes me for the day. I feel like a zombie walking around, and I'm not sure I should feel quite like that.
I don't know, man. That's a lot of high intensity work. It's like, I think that it does, it loads you up. You should make sure you get enough I'm gonna be like your mom now. Make sure you get enough protein. Make sure you like
But that's the thing, isn't it? Is eating, trying to eat a bit healthier. And I mean, Christmas is obviously a hard time for everyone. I've got so much stuff downstairs here, like chocolates and stuff. It's like, oh, I'm glad I'm off work at the moment. I work at a school, so I don't go back till on Monday. I'm quite
Oh,
glad when I go back, so I can take some of the stuff that, like chocolates and biscuits that are sitting down there, keep winking at me.
so have you, I have to ask, have you hit the ground yet? Like I'm a mountain bike, like I was a long time mountain bike racer and my risk reward and like hitting the ground definitely hurts more now. Like, have you hit the ground?
I have, yeah, a few times. When I first got my bike, and I think I went down about 3 times in the first month of me having my bike. 2 times was on a pump track, and they're really unforgiving because they're like tarmac all. And I think it was me being, I don't know, I think I hadn't really learned properly the new style of the bike or anything. I was still thinking like I was back in the 80s and not taking into account that bikes have changed, the style has changed, where I need to ride has changed. I mean, this has been a good thing for me as well. I've enjoyed learning like all this new it's like, it's been like learning a new sport, even though it's sort of instilled in me from all those years. It's still been like learning, you know, when something clicks in place, you go, yes, I've just done that, you know, I've manualed through that double. And we didn't do stuff like that back then. But when I first got my bike, yeah, oh, I took a few big purlers. Yeah, I am trying to jump as well. I had to take a step back from jumping and remember that I'm not like as young as I was. But I mean, it does hurt a lot more. I mean, I've took a lot of skin off my shoulder, a lot of skin off my knees. I mean, it was in the early days when, and I didn't have, it was stupidity, I didn't have my knee pads on. Well, I didn't have any at the time. But the thing was, it's so, when you start like any new sport, it's expensive, isn't it? And I just bought a bike, and of course I had to buy a helmet. And I started looking at, you know, knee pads, and they wear body armor. We didn't wear body armor back in the 80s. We didn't even have full face helmets. We just had like an open face helmet with a little chin strap, no elbow pads, nothing. Like I say, now they wear full body armor, and proper and knee pads. But I didn't, because I'd bought my helmet, I bought my bike, and I was looking at the price. I was like, oh my God, do I really want to spend, you know, £150 on some knee pads? You know, will I, you know, because you're unsure in my mind for what I'm re where I'm really going with this at this time back, you know, a few months ago. I was like, you know, I wasn't really sure if it was just going to be for exercise or whatever. But and I was like, in the end, I was sort of looking for secondhand ones. So it was taking time. Then I got some online, and then they were the wrong size. And in the meantime, I was like, oh, I'm going out training. Then of course I fell off. And so I learned my lesson the hard way by not having, yeah, my full armor or full pads on when I first went out. And now I make sure I always wear it now. But it
You have
does,
all of
but it does play in the back of my mind these days. I've taken a step back from like I say, jumping, trying to jump. You don't need to really as much anymore. You can pump through the jumps. I can manual like a wheelie. I don't, we used to call them wheelies, but they call them manual in now. Something else has changed. But so you can sort of manual wheelie through some of the jumps, and I can do that. So there's no big need to jump everything, you know, or try and jump everything and risk you. And I do think about the risk factors. When I was training, there is a jumper, my local club, and it was a real nemesis for me for a long, long time. And it was just going into the first berm. It was a big jump, and it was a bit too, you're going too fast to pump it, and it's too deep to manual through it. And yet it's the only way really is to jump it, really. That is the only way. But because obviously I was having to sort of slow down to go to pump through it because I was going too fast to, it was just a real nemesis. It really bugged me. So I really did want to jump this jump. So what I took a step and I was like, okay, so I'm going to practice on a small. And this was what I've done. So I've rather than just go, yeah, I'm going to go out and jump it. I didn't. I started on a small set of doubles and just jumping those and just making sure I was getting over it and building up and building up. When I was confident on jumping the small set, then I bit the bullet and I went for it on the one. And now, yeah, it's okay. I can jump it now if the weather's good. But I don't take it if I feel like I'm not going fast enough or I've been closed in with other riders around me, then no, I'll just. It does hurt a lot more when you're older. And this day recovery, if you get injured, it takes a long time to recover. You don't bounce like you used to. I know.
So the big event you're training for regionals, right? In April, that's what you're going for.
Yeah. So the plan is for next year is for me to race the British Championships. So to race the British Championships, I've got to race at least five regionals.
Okay.
So in the local region here in the south, you don't actually have to place in them; you just have to attend them, really, racing them. But I mean, obviously, I'm hoping to place. But so that this is the plan. So the plan is to race the regionals and race in the British Championships, which would be August, the end of August, and. Yeah, I hope. I just hope. Yeah, we'll see. I'm hoping to be. I'm trying to aim. I'm aiming as high as I can. And we'll see.
That's exciting. Is there a class that goes above 30? Do you have an age class for 50 plus?
No, they do in the men. They do. They actually have a 55 plus men's class over here, but the women only go up to 30, which is unfortunate. There's a bit. There, it's not a massive. Massive age class, really. There's at the British Championships because I went to watch it this year, and a lot of the older riders do ride like a 24 inch BMX. So there was 21 30 plus in the British Championships. So it's not masses. I think there's a problem with women's and females in sport. Obviously, it starts off with the youngsters. I mean, there's so many like under six girls, under seven girls. But you start getting up to like 18 and then the 20, and then it's really peters off. But then, like I say, it's picked up. It's not 30 plus. As I said, there was 21 entered into the Brits last year. And I know that there's about seven over 50
Oh, wow.
racing in. Yeah. And the lady that's actually currently British Championship is 52, a British champion. So it's given me this like. I mean, that stoked the fire a bit more because I know that I've got no excuses for her being the same age as me.
Yeah, that's super
Really.
cool. That is
So,
super
yeah,
cool.
I mean, the lady that comes second, she's more local to me. So I think I'll get to race her before I race the other lady. So they're my two that I've sort of got my eye on at the moment, anyway.
Well, I'm so excited for you, and I can feel the excitement coming from you, which is very, very cool. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to like share with the audience if they're, I don't know, thinking about picking something up that they haven't picked up for a long time?
If you just give it a go, if you want to, there's no age limit. His age is a number, isn't it, really? So, I mean, there's a chap over here, 76, and still riding BMX. If you fancy having a go at BMX or you fancy having a go at, I don't know, trampolining, then, just do it. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Just do it. And if you're feeling unwell and you're suffering, especially with menopause or anything, really, seek some help and no, hopefully that's what I can say, really. I mean, I've done that. I'm just super stoked that I'm back in and having fun and enjoying it and getting fit and looking forward to the season coming up now. So, and it's also great because you meet people as a great social scene, and even if you're not sporty, then like I say, just try and meet up with your friends and stuff, make a telephone call, whatever. Don't be lonely.
Yeah. Great advice for everybody. Well, that's our show. Join me next week when I sit down with exercise physiologist and nutrition researcher, Dr. Abby Smith Ryan. We talk all about how our hormones impact our exercise and recovery needs, as well as what supplements you need and what you don't. So come on back for that one. And until then, as always, stay feisty. You've been listening to Hit Play, Not Pause, a feisty menopause podcast for active, performance-minded women. I'm your host, Celine Yeager. The show is edited and produced by the strong, talented, and amazing women at Live Feisty Media. Follow us on social media at Feisty Menopause, and please help us spread the word. Screenshot and share this episode on your social media channels with the tag at Feisty Menopause. Share the show with your friends, and please subscribe, like, review, and rate this show wherever you get your podcasts. Word of mouth and good reviews make it easier for other listeners to find. Thanks for listening, and as always, stay feisty.